This is Ozarks Large for Friday, March 18th, 2011. I'm Kyle Callums. In just a moment on Ozarks, the world's largest retailer goes smaller, at least some of the time. Jacqueline Froelich reports on Walmart's concept of a much smaller store, plus opening arguments in the Act One case at the Arkansas Supreme Court. We begin, though, with news from the legislature. Lawmakers in Little Rock appear to be a big step closer to ending the 88th General Assembly by the beginning of April. The House and Senate have gained mutual agreement on a set of tax cuts. Kelly McNeil has this report from Little Rock.
A $35 million package made up of six tax cuts has been agreed to, including both House and Senate measures. It includes a scaled-down used car tax cut, tax relief for some single parents, and the governor's half-cent grocery tax cut. State Senator Gilbert Baker says the compromise will allow the legislature to finish its business on time April 1st.
We had to try to talk it out and come to terms, and everybody was willing to give a little bit. The governor was willing to give some additional tax cut go ahead for us, and we scaled some of ours back. We included some house tax cuts.
Governor Beebe says he'll sign the bills, even though they total twice the amount of tax cuts he originally found acceptable due to a tight state budget. House GOP leader John Burris doesn't call it a victory, but says Republicans are satisfied.
This is what they've been saying from the beginning, lower taxes and less spending. This accomplishes that. You can't get everything you want, but we met in the middle, and I think that's a good way to set public policy.
Also included in the package is a back-to-school tax holiday and a manufacturer's utility tax break. The cuts could be offset in part in the state budget by reducing cost-of-living raises for some state employees.
Kelly McNeil from our sister station KUAR in Little Rock filed that report for Ozarks at Large. Walmart, the world's largest retailer? Well, they've decided to go small. The company, famous for its supercenters, plans to build as many as 40 express stores this year and supermarkets, as well as additional college campus stores like the one that can be found in Fayetteville. The first Walmart on campus opened on the University of Arkansas campus in January. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
We're standing in the world's tiniest Walmart, the prototypes branded Walmart on campus, because it's situated on the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. The 3,000-square-foot convenience store carries things like ramen noodles, power bars, frozen pizza and soda, all the stuff students crave. They can even fill prescriptions here. Ian Plummer's picked out mac and cheese, frozen veggies, and some sort of blue drink. He says it's easier than schlepping to the supercenter.
It's definitely cheaper than a lot of the other places on campus, so it's nice to save a little bit as well.
Because convenience stores charge more. Here you'll find those everyday low prices, and students who spot the blue and yellow starburst hanging above the doorway tend to wander in, look around, then totally stock up. David Tovar is Vice President of Communications for Walmart U.S.
Walmart on campus is a really cool format on the campus of the University of Arkansas. We try things close to home so we can track progress and make adjustments as needed. Frankly, it's doing better than anybody anticipated.
The company's also building its first Walmart Express stores in Northwest Arkansas in Gentry, Gravette, and Prairie Grove.
Our new Walmart Express stores will offer a great assortment at great prices in roughly 15,000 square feet. The merchandise mix will include a strong emphasis on groceries, as well as a more limited selection of general merchandise. Specifically, the new format will feature an assortment of fresh food, dry grocery, consumables, health and beauty aids, over-the-counter medicines, and limited general merchandise. We plan to test a number of variations in both urban and rural markets, with pharmacies and without pharmacies.
On Wednesday, the company announced plans to expand express stores on Chicago's southwest side. Of course, Walmart's sprawling supercenters account for three-quarters of its U.S. stores, but shopping among 140,000 items can be epic. So in 1998, the company built its first neighborhood market grocery store, and last week it announced plans to build even more in various sizes, but newly branded as Walmart Markets. Britt Beamer is chairman of America's Research Group, a consumer research firm based in Charleston, South Carolina. He says Walmart can build just so many supercenters before reaching carrying capacity.
Because every time they open up a new big box somewhere, they're cannibalizing existing store sales, which impacts negative comp store sales. So now they're looking at new formats.
Formats that will likely shake the dollar store chains. which are proliferating across the country now.
The consumer now has a lower price option. And it's interesting to note that we just finished doing our survey for the last month, and our survey found that nationally about 36% of consumers in the month of February shopped at a dollar store, but over 45% of Walmart customers shopped at a dollar store last month.
And capturing all those dollars would help lift the company from a two-year lull in same-store U.S. sales, although both international and Sam's Club wholesale store sales remain strong. Along with rolling out its small store formats, Walmart will continue to build the iconic supercenters and tweak existing ones via remodels and inventory adjustments. And Brett Beamer says his research indicates consumers are now acclimated and strategic big box shoppers.
The vast majority of shoppers who now shop at Walmart in a very focused way. For example, many women will go in shopping for groceries, and they know when they shop for groceries, groceries is their primary item, and they'll go over to the discount part of the store to pick up a few items here and there. But many shoppers that say to us on a regular basis, when they want to shop at Walmart for other things and not groceries, they purposely even avoid the grocery door entrance, park on the other side of the store, go into Walmart, get what they want, and come out. So the consumer, to some extent, has built a new understanding of what Walmart is. Now, keep in mind, you know, the Supercenter concept is probably the most ingenious in the world because, you know, before we had Supercenters, you know, Walmart was getting consumers going in their stores about 4.5 times a month. Now many Americans shop Walmart 8.6 times a month. So it didn't quite double, but it almost doubled their store visits. Now, the dollar stores, of course, are pulling some of those numbers down a little bit. But the fact is that the consumer who goes to Walmart knows pretty much what they want. And, of course, 90% of consumers that shop Walmart go to the same one over and over, so they know the store very well. So they know how to, maneuver through the store. And most consumers tell us it's still a 35 to 45-minute shopping visit. But, of course, Walmart, it benefits from that in many cases because many times a consumer will be in the Walmart store and say, oh, gosh, I need to get something else. I'll just get it here. So that consumer goes in the other part of the store and picks it up. And, of course, Walmart benefits because that shopper is now not going to Home Depot or Lowe's or some home improvement store or to a craft store to pick up something that they can buy at Walmart.
As for Walmart on campus, the company plans to build more of them, too. And although likely not a big revenue generator, Britt Beamer says they will entrain up-and-coming consumers.
You know, they've got all these campuses around the country, and you've got these kids that are basically trapped animals, so to speak, because many of them don't have cars. They have to rely upon friends to get out of the campus in many cases, and they need to save as much money as they can, and there's no longer that stigma against shopping at Walmart by many college kids like you saw 10 or 15 years ago. So now, you know, Walmart, if they can find a location on campuses, can open up a whole new concept. Of course, the only one drawback is it may only be a strong 9-month concept versus a 12-month concept because of the summer months. But still, I always said when I saw the one in Arkansas, I wasn't there, but I saw photographs of it by a friend of mine, I knew it had to be a prototype because they were trying a lot of things, and you're going to see a lot of these pop up over the country. And Walmart never does one store of any kind for a reason. They do one store of any kind to see if it works, to be able to multiply it hundreds of times. So I think you'll see more and more of the Walmart campus stores open up, and I think they have to because what they need to do is they need to show the college student that Walmart is a good place to shop. So when they finish college, they'll naturally move to Walmart on a progression basis from going from a campus store to a regular Walmart store once they get out of school.
Always, then, a next generation of Walmart shoppers. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
And ahead on this edition of Friday, Ozarks at Large, opening arguments in the Act 1 case at the Arkansas Supreme Court. That was the initiated act passed by a majority of Arkansas voters that bans unmarried couples from adopting or fostering children. The case opened yesterday with arguments. Ron Breeding has that report from Little Rock. And Kevin Kinder, who covers music for Northwest Arkansas newspapers and is the man behind the blog NWA Tuned In, a local music blog, will help us get ready for music festival season from South by Southwest to Bonnaroo to Wakarusa in our own backyard. That and much more ahead on this edition of Friday Ozarks at Large. And if you enjoy Science Friday every Friday afternoon on KUAF, then you may want to tune in this evening to KUAF 3 for a number of programs that we've dubbed Exploration Friday. It all begins every Friday night with at 7 with 3 hours on the latest in space exploration, environment, medicine, and technology. It's every Friday night beginning at 7 on KUAF 3, and you can listen for free through your HD radio, your internet radio, or at KUAF.com. or the public radio or KUAF apps that you can find on your smartphone. This is a Friday edition of Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas Supreme Court heard oral arguments this week in the appeal of a lower court ruling striking down a state law that forbids unmarried couples from adopting or fostering children. Ron Breeding from Little Rock has a report on the first day's events.
Act 1 was approved by Arkansas voters in 2008. It states that cohabiting couples involved in a sexual relationship, whether gay or straight, shall not be allowed to serve as foster or adoptive parents in Arkansas. During oral arguments that lasted just over an hour, several justices questioned whether the law violates the right to privacy in the bedroom. Justice Robert Brown.
Looking at Act 1, what it proscribes is sexual conduct between partners. Now, how would you enforce that particular prescription without the government coming into the homes?
Justice Paul Danielson.
Two individuals who are not sexual partners, there's nothing about the act to preclude them from being eligible for adopting or foster parenting. So two individuals that are told, so don't you have to inquire whether they're sexual partners in order to determine eligibility?
Justice Donald Corbin.
Under your theory, as I understand it, that would make them subject to penalty.
No, because they don't have an intimate relationship.
How do you know whether they do or don't? That's what bothers me, unless you've got eyes that are going to go in there and spying on people now.
Yeah, no.
Like Nazi Germany in a way.
After the oral arguments, lawyer Byron Babione, who represented the family council in defending the law, told us the justices would be wrong to conclude that the state right to sexual privacy outlined in the 2002 case of Jegley v. Picado applies in this case.
It absolutely doesn't apply in this case. This isn't about adult desires to want to engage in private sexual acts. This has nothing to do with that. The state doesn't want to know what they're doing and doesn't seek to know what they're doing. But when they come to the state and they want to have a child, then many things become relevant.
Frank Panisi, who along with his partner Matt Harrison is a plaintiff in the case, told reporters he looks forward to the day when they'll be able to adopt.
Matt and I could break up and we could live as single men and we could have a different sexual partner in our home every night, and that would make us good parents and suitable parents under this law. The only thing that makes us unsuitable parents is the fact that we live together in a committed, stable relationship for 10 years.
A spokesman for the Supreme Court says we can expect the justices to rule on the constitutionality of Act 1 sometime before the end of April.
Ron Breeding filed that report from Little Rock. South by Southwest, the epic meeting of musicians, filmmakers, writers, critics, hangers-on, fans, and hipsters in Austin, Texas, began earlier this week. The music festival season is underway and will include gatherings from New Orleans for the annual Jazz and Heritage Festival there, to the middle of rural Tennessee for Bonnaroo, to the Arkansas River Valley for Wakarusa. Kevin Kinder, who covers music for Northwest Arkansas newspapers and writes the blog NWATunedIn.com, is planning on attending at least a couple of festivals this year. He says the already underway South by Southwest remains an important vehicle for music nationally and locally.
Although things have changed in the digital age, South by Southwest is still the biggest music event of the year in terms of how many bands are there, how many fans show up in Austin, and people want to be seen. They want to get a record deal, and that's sort of how they do it.
South by Southwest, which takes place all over Austin, Texas, I've never been there, but it seems to me it's sort of the musical equivalent of like a Cannes Film Festival something like that.
It absolutely is. And I haven't been there either, but I know that a lot of people from here are going to spend their spring breaks catching as many acts as they can. And every little coffee shop, every stage in Austin, Texas is going to be filled with music.
What are some of the highlights? If I was going to... Oh, and by the way, if you're really hip, You don't call it by South by Southwest, do you?
South by.
South by. Okay.
That's right.
Well, what are some of the highlights of this year's South by?
You know, one of the interesting things about South by is it's hard to say who's going to be there. It's an industry showcase, and they have record labels who have parties, and they will have one of their bands, and it's sort of like, oh, guess what? Here's, you know, last year's big deal was Van Morrison played some intimate shows there. And if you can get into these things, they're incredible. But, you know, some of the bands have announced that they're going to be there. Bright Eyes is going to make an appearance. Duran Duran, Queens of the Stone Age.
It's interesting that Duran Duran and Stone Age are in that same sentence. Go ahead.
And, you know, a band like The Strokes, they're going to play a free show. If you can get in, again, it's free for the taking. So, you know, the pass is there, like the all-access guaranteed permission into all of these. It's rather expensive. It's about $750 for the week-long music event. But, again, individual venues will allow you access to a lot of these shows. And the real key is sort of finding what's next. All of these different record labels have showcases, and they will offer the talent that they think will be the next big hit.
And the thing about Austin is already there's so much music there on any given day. It just explodes during Southwest Southwest.
It absolutely does.
Now, Memphis has a big... It used to be called Memphis in May, right?
It still is, but what they have as part of that is the Beale Street Music Festival, which leads into the larger Memphis in May, which also has a barbecue competition, right, which has some cultural events that happen all throughout the month. Specifically, the Beale Street Music Festival, and I think it's sort of cheating, it actually starts in April. April 29th is the first day of that, and it's a three-day festival that runs through May 1st. So we've got a lot of different artists coming to Memphis, and I know, again, a lot of folks from this area will make that trip across the state. Some of those are going to be there: the Avett Brothers, Mumford & Sons, CeeLo Green.
Woo!
That's a big one, yeah.
I'd like to see CeeLo Green.
You know, and that's one of the cool things about festivals like this. CeeLo Green isn't going to play Kane's Ballroom. He's not going to play the Amp, or maybe I'm speaking too soon. I just don't anticipate that they're going to be at some of these smaller venues in the area. But a festival where you've got several thousand people, that makes it a lot more attractive for a performer like him. And I just don't know where else you're going to see him in the Midwest this summer.
Right.
And more festivals will announce dates, and I may be speaking out of turn. But this is a neat opportunity to see him. Some of the other acts you've got, John Mellencamp, Kesha, Wilco, Jason Mraz, Godsmack. It's a really diverse lineup that they have. But one of the cool things it does, too, and we're already seeing some of this, Lucinda Williams is going to play at Beale Street Music Fest. And May 1st, she's going to be here. So, you know, one of the things these festivals in our area do is they provide a routing tool for artists to pass through. So, you know, let's say she's in... she's headed off to Colorado next. A logical stop for her is here in Fayetteville, and she's indeed playing on May 1.
One of the closest ones to us, not the closest, but one of the closest, is Riverfest in Little Rock.
Riverfest, May 27th through 29th. I don't think we know all of the artists who are going to be there just yet, but they've announced some of the headliners. Nelly is going to be there.
Wow. Wow.
Charlie Daniels Band, Papa Roach, Pat Green, REO Speedwagon, and Poison. If you didn't get enough of Bret Michaels when he was at the Amp, you can go catch him in Little Rock, and that's May 27th through 29th. Poison is also going to be at another, this is turning into a really big festival, Rocklahoma.
It's been going on for a few years now.
It has
a great name.
Well, yeah. And, you know, they're estimating that 35,000 people will visit Rocklahoma this year. And it's close to Pryor, Oklahoma. They've got Poison, like I said, but they've also got Black Label Society, Stained, Whitesnake, Skillet, and the headliners are Motley Crue. So Motley Crue coming to Oklahoma, and that's at Rocklahoma.
Rocklahoma. The one that you and I have talked about before in the air, and we should talk a little bit about here, is the one that is the closest to us, which is Wakarusa.
That's right. And it's,
and what a lineup.
What a lineup. It's really turning into a big deal. And it's growing. The first year it was here was 2009. It moved from Kansas. 2009, they had about 10,000 paid attendees. In 2010, they had closer to 20,000. And I'm expecting, and the organizers are too, that there's going to be closer to 25,000 this year, which is about the maximum that that festival site can comfortably accommodate. And the reason it's bigger is because, I think you'd agree with me, it's got a bigger lineup than they've ever had before.
Mumford & Sons, My Morning Jacket.
Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. We've also got Bass Nectar, Ben Harper. It's going to be huge.
Yeah. Now, tickets are already on sale.
That's right.
And have been selling quickly, I understand.
We're told, actually, that they're selling at a faster rate than they've ever sold in the history. Some of the ticket tiers are already sold out. Some of the campsites, there are, I think, six different campsites, and some of those are already accounted for.
Are you going to Wakarusa this year?
I will definitely be at Wakarusa.
Is that the extent of your festival going?
It is not. Because and this is one of the neat things about Wakarusa. It has always been the weekend before a larger music festival, which is Bonnaroo, which is in the middle of nowhere, Tennessee. And
and kind of considered, of the modern-day festivals, kind of the Rose Bowl, right?
It is. Coachella is a big deal. So mm-hmm. is Lollapalooza. But this one really got traction started in the festival movement. And I would argue it's sort of, as you say, it's the big deal. And so many of the bands that we're going to see here in Northwest Arkansas at Wakarusa are making that trip 3 or 4 days later, and they're going to perform at Bonnaroo. And I'm headed out there too, and they've announced just again with an eclectic lineup. They've got Eminem.
Interesting.
And Arcade Fire.
Uh-huh.
Widespread Panic, the Black Keys, and the band that I'm perhaps most excited about personally is Buffalo Springfield.
And not just any incarnation of Buffalo Springfield.
With Stephen Stills and Neil Young.
Wow.
Yeah. Those two guys. So we're seeing a lot of those same acts. Mumford & Sons will be there. Mumford & Sons will also be there. Grace Potter and the Nocturnals will be at both of those festivals. So the dedicated festival folks, and there's really a circuit of people who travel from not just those two festivals, but all across the country. They will go from one festival to the next to the next.
They have their flag that they carry with them so you can find them.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And they set up camp, and they have banners that announce the name of their own little campsite and organization, I guess. And all of these people will pick up from Northwest Arkansas and go straight to Tennessee and see this festival.
Well, keep us up to date as we get closer to Wakarusa.
Sure will.
Kevin Kinder, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Kyle.
Kevin Kinder covers music for Northwest Arkansas newspapers. He also writes the blog nwatunedin.com. It is the last weekend of winter, but the beginning for many of spring break. Ahead on Ozarks at Large, Becca Bacon-Martin lists some ideas for what to do if you're fortunate enough to have some time off next week, and she also has suggestions for those of us working through the week as well. That's still ahead on Friday, Ozarks at Large.
That's the unmistakable sound of the Dave Brubeck Quartet, and of course, drummer Joe Morello. Tonight on Shades of Jazz, I will pay special tribute to the late, great Joe Morello, who passed away this week. I'll be joined by Steve Wilkes, and we'll hear some of his music and some of his life. Also, on the first hour of the show, I will feature an interview with guitarist Julian Lage and music from his brand new CD, Gladwell. Julian Lage will be performing at the Walton Arts Center on Saturday, March 26th. This and much more tonight at 10 p.m. on Shades of Jazz.
This is Friday Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
Here's a Trout Fishing in America prompt. I'm getting sad, Kyle.
Why is that?
I'm getting bummed out, Kyle.
Why?
It's not because I want you to do little bunny foo-foo ears. It's because it's spring break, and I'll be at work.
There are two kinds of people in the world. Those whose lives are affected by spring break, and those whose lives are not.
But I've been in New Orleans for spring break for the last several years.
Oh, that's right. And that always affected my life.
Yes, it did.
Because I'd have to talk to you on
the phone.
Okay,
so now you're happy that I'll be here. But here's the good news. Mm-hmm. We have some great ideas for spring break day trips that you can take close to home.
Okay. And if you are one of the fortunate ones to not have to work during spring
break. Right. Or if you can get away with calling in sick. Boy, I just announced that intention, didn't I? So, we're going to cover North and South today.
Mm-hmm.
We'll cover East, West, and at home with Ithi on Sunday.
Sounds good to me.
All right. North. Never been to this place. I really want to go. It's called the Butterfly Palace.
In Branson.
In Branson. At any given time, there are 1,000 butterflies flying.
Which I would imagine, maybe for the first few seconds, that's a little strange.
Well, they're not really flying. Because the Audubon Insectarium in New Orleans has a butterfly garden, too. Mm. And they're not really all flying.
They're flying,
they're landing, gotcha. They're flitting, they're doing butterfly things. But it's gorgeous. I can tell you that from experience. And in their aviary at the Butterfly Palace in Branson, there are also ladybugs and some nectar-eating birds. All sorts of things to see that you can take pictures of. There's also the Rainforest Science Center, which has red-eyed tree frogs, basilisks, salamanders, cockroaches.
Alive?
And poison dart frogs.
Alive basilisks?
One assumes.
Wow, that's worth the price of admission.
I would love to go there. And the Emerald Forest Mirror Maze for little kids. So that should be fun. They're open 9 to 5 daily. They're on West Missouri 76 in Branson, so you can't miss it. $18.95 for adults, $9.95 for children ages 4 to 12. You can find out more at thebutterflypalace.com.
Very good.
If you're going south, the Fort Smith Museum of History.
One of my favorite places.
I haven't been there in ages, but it sounds like so much fun. What kid doesn't love ice cream?
And you've got the soda fountain right there.
And fire trucks.
Yes.
And cannons.
Yes.
And playing dress up.
Right.
And riding a real working streetcar.
Which I've driven once.
Have you really?
Yes, I have.
In Fort Smith?
Yep. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, I hate you.
Don't ask. They don't. That's one of those perks of doing what I do. But it's worth the ride.
Well, they might let me.
They might, yes. But it is worth the ride because it is an authentic trolley that has been not refabricated, but restored.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll tell you all about it. It's worth the trip.
And if you get the timing right, you can catch the streetcar at the Fort Smith Museum of History. Mm-hmm. Take it over to Garrison Avenue in the Trolley Museum. Or you can walk next door and visit the National Historic Site.
I'm telling you, if you're downtown Fort Smith at Garrison, there's just so much history. There's Bell Point, which was where the first fort was. You have the National Cemetery over there.
Mm-hmm.
You can spend an entire day down there.
And I didn't know until I talked to the director of the museum that when they did renovations at the fort that they left Hanging Judge Parker's courtroom at the museum.
Yes.
And so you can actually see the real thing. What's at the fort now is modern so that it can be used for mock trials.
Right.
So you can also go to their telephone room where you can try out telegraphs and a rotary dial telephone. I was so proud. Thursday morning, I went to Holt Middle School in Fayetteville to talk to a writing class about writing and journalism, and I was so proud they knew what typewriters were.
I can't remember the last time I actually saw someone, I mean, honestly using one, but...
Well, then trying to explain to them how in the old days we got what we had typed onto a newspaper page. Yeah.
Is carbon paper still around?
I haven't seen it. Well, yes, because it's used, people use it in tracing for sewing sometimes.
Oh, okay.
So I know it still exists.
Very good.
But anyway, I digress. The Fort Smith Museum of History, 10 to 5, Tuesday through Saturday at 320 Rogers Avenue in downtown Fort Smith. $5 for adults, $2 for ages 6 to 15. And you should call 783-0205 for information about when the trolley's running.
All worth it.
Also this weekend.
Yes.
Get the out the door to the Pink Floyd experience. tonight at the Walton Arts Center. They will play the album Animals in its entirety.
Piggies.
Kyle's grinning really big.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll play some other Pink Floyd hits. The band often performs favorites like Comfortably Numb and Have a Cigar. $24 to $60 for tickets, 443-5600. Northwest Arkansas band Schulertown.
Yeah.
Is releasing its debut album, Free Range, tonight at George's Majestic Lounge. The band was formed last year by a quartet of musicians who've played all over Northwest Arkansas. And clearly, this is their CD release. The band Junior Soapbox will open the show at 9 o'clock, and tickets are $6.
Should be a lot of fun.
Tomorrow. Yes. Oh, should we tell people what Schulertown means?
Well, Schulertown's a reference back to old Dixon Street in Fayetteville. I mean, back before us.
Right.
Yeah.
There was a before us, folks, just in case you wondered. Tomorrow, fun things to do.
It was a drugstore, right? Schuler had a drug and variety store?
Something like that.
And kids that were on campus, if they were going to go down to have fun on Dixon Street, they would go toward the east end of Dixon Street. Before college, though, and it was called Schulertown because you hung out around there. That's how I remember
when it was a party spot behind Jose's.
Mm-hmm.
So we digress again.
Yes.
It's one of those days. Tomorrow, the Spring Antique Show and Sale, 10 to 6 at the end of the Ozarks Convention Center in Eureka Springs. $3 to get in. I'm sure it's free to drool over things you wish you had. Also tomorrow, Fayetteville's first Food and Farming Film Festival.
Dig in.
Dig in. So proud I said that. Including the film The Economics of Happiness, which sounds really interesting. Starts at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning at the Omni Center. It's $20 for the whole day until 10 o'clock tomorrow night. The couples game is tomorrow night.
My wife and I were in that last year at the Goddess Festival.
Yes,
came in second.
7 o'clock tomorrow night. And the address this year for the Goddess Festival is 637 East Joyce Boulevard in Fayetteville. It's $10 for the couples game.
It's based on the Newlywed Game.
Right.
It's almost exactly the Newlywed Game, but the questions are a lot more intelligent than the old Newlywed Game. There's not the double entendre and innuendo.
Did you find out anything about Laura you didn't know?
No, we came in second, so we found out that we knew each other pretty well.
Okay, well, there you go. And if you know me, even passingly, you know that where I'll be tomorrow night. And Kyle does, but he's not getting it. Arlo Guthrie is at the Walton Arts Center tomorrow
absolutely
night.
Absolutely, you'll be there, of course.
This year he is performing with the Byrne Sisters, a group out of upstate New York who do country, folk,
Americana,
very
beautiful harmonies.
Very well-reviewed group. And the tour is called Journey On. I should tell you, I got to talk to Arlo.
Which made you very happy.
Pretty much, I'm done here now and can retire happy. But just in case you need to know, he will not be doing Alice's Restaurant.
Okay. He's got a lot of other good stuff.
It is not the five-year anniversary of the 1965 incident. So if you want to hear Alice's Restaurant, come back in 2015.
That's when he does it?
That's when he'll do it again.
Okay.
Tickets
for
tomorrow
night. I wonder if he does the whole thing when he does it.
I heard him do it here the last time. I was that shrieking person in the second row.
Okay.
It was wonderful. Tickets for Saturday night show are $26 to $52 at 443-5600. And a note, his son Abe plays keyboards and sings on the tour.
All right. Well, very good. So we've gone north and south for spring break tonight and today. And then Sunday,
we'll go east and west and something close to home with Ithy.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
Start spreading the news. You're leaving today. Tell him, Frank.
I want to be a part of it. New York, New York.
Composer John Kander was born on this date in 1927. Kander teamed with lyricist Fred Ebb to forge one of the longest-running and most successful creative partnerships in Broadway history. Kander began studying music as a child and started his professional career in 1950 with Second Square. He made his Broadway composing debut with the 1962 flop A Family Affair. Later that same year, he met Ebb, with whom he soon collaborated on the songs My Coloring Book and I Don't Care Much, both later recorded by Barbara Streisand. The duo's first stage musical, Golden Gate, convinced producer Harold Prince to hire them for his Flora the Red Menace, which featured Liza Minnelli in her Tony Award-winning Broadway debut. 1966's Cabaret rocketed the duo to massive critical and commercial success, winning 7 Tony Awards on its way to a run of 1,166 performances and an Oscar-winning film adaptation. In 1972, the duo composed a number of songs for Minnelli's Emmy-winning TV special, Liza with a Z. After contributing material to Streisand's 1975 film Funny Girl, later that same year, the duo launched Chicago. In 1977, they scored Martin Scorsese's film musical New York, New York. The title song later became a signature hit for Frank Sinatra, as well as the Big Apple's unofficial theme. Their 1991 induction into the New York Theater Hall of Fame coincided with the premiere of And the World Goes Round, an off-Broadway tribute review featuring dozens of their songs. In 1997, Kander and Ebb were announced as recipients of the 21st Annual Kennedy Center Honors.
Start of it right there in old New York.
Malcolm Bowman, who was born in Texas but moved to Pine Bluff at age 10, died in Little Rock on this date in 1993. Bowman was respected worldwide as an analytical chemist, researcher, and author. He and his associates were credited with devising many techniques and processes, as well as developing much of the equipment that became common within the fields of chemistry and scientific research. 80 years ago on this date, Schick Incorporated marketed the first electric razor. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
It's March Madness. Everybody's filling out their brackets, but nobody knows who to pick in the first round matchup, NPR versus House Republicans. While the GOP is wily, they have a deep bench, but do not underestimate Carl Castle's skyhook. I'm Peter Sagal. Join us for a single elimination news quiz. Wait, wait, don't tell me. From NPR.
Wait, wait, don't tell me. Sunday at noon on KUAF 91.3 FM. This is Ozarks at Large. It started March 1st, and it's called the Great American Cleanup in Arkansas. It's sponsored by the Keep Arkansas Beautiful Commission. Recently, Roby Brock from our content partner TalkBusiness.net spent some time with volunteers picking up trash and litter near Hot Springs. And he has this report on how the effort is translating statewide.
Last year, more than 16,000 volunteers picked up 700,000 pounds of litter and debris across the state. Sarah Ruck is the Keep Arkansas Beautiful Commission volunteer coordinator for the cleanup. It's a huge job, but the work put in by all her volunteers pays huge dividends to the state's economy.
It speaks to economic development. The reason that we really want to keep our state clean and beautiful is because of the community improvement and economic development aspect. Keeping our communities clean and vibrant and prosperous, it attracts businesses, it attracts tourism, and it attracts people who want to relocate to the state of Arkansas.
Here in Hot Springs, the Great American Cleanup in Arkansas is part of a local effort called Cash for Trash. This Saturday morning, 12 different groups at various locations on Lake Hamilton, the Washita River, and Lake Catherine collected well over 3 tons of trash. Each bag of litter is worth $5, with a total limit up to $200 for the club or organizations involved. Sponsors like Entergy and the Hot Springs Sanitation Department help promote this effort through a nonprofit called Trash Bash Incorporated. That's according to the City of Hot Springs, Bob Burrow.
This is the fifth year. It's been tremendously successful. When you think about the amount of litter that could be washed into any of these lakes and streams, it's tremendous the amount as they draw down these lakes that gets caught on that shoreline. And this is a concerted effort, an organized effort to make sure that we try to collect as much of that litter as possible before they refill the lakes.
National sponsors have provided supplies like trash bags and gloves so the volunteers can get down to the work of beautifying the state and saving taxpayer dollars. Last year, that amount of savings was significant.
They contributed in volunteer hours what it would have cost the state to pay to have that work done. And that is a significant benefit to the state of Arkansas, over $1.2 million. And that was just for our spring cleanup. We do another cleanup in the fall, which, of course, is a very similar cleanup and provides a cost benefit again to the state of Arkansas. So volunteers are priceless.
You can learn more about the Great American Cleanup in Arkansas, scheduled to continue through May, at keeparkansasbeautiful.com or the website talkbusiness.net. Next week for many schools and colleges in our area is spring break. For some, the break is shorter than originally scheduled, a few days lost because of school days lost to this year's snowstorm. But no spring break for Ozarks at large. We'll have a full week of new programs. And Monday, a conversation with John and Lindy Hall. Combined, they have 85 years of teaching experience. She taught at the same junior high school for 25 years. He taught on the college level for years. And, oh, by the way, he was awarded the 2005 Nobel Prize for Physics for his work in optics and lasers. Together, they've launched an effort to stimulate interest in learning math and science in schools. John Hall delivered the 2011 Robert D. Maurer Distinguished Lecture last night, sponsored by the University of Arkansas Department of Physics, and it takes place every year on the University of Arkansas campus. But earlier today, the Halls visited the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. The majority of that conversation will be heard on Monday's edition of Ozarks at Large, but here's a portion of that interview. Did becoming a Nobel laureate when the 2005 Nobel was awarded, did that make you suddenly seem smarter to people or give you other doors that you could open?
Certainly it gives expectation that other people have that somehow if you have gotten this certificate that you must be really smart. And I didn't think I was fully stupid before, but I'm sure that I don't feel that I'm fully smart now.
And when they see him licking self-adhesive stamps or watering a silk orchid in a pot in his living room, I mean, they kind of stop and think.
But you ask me a question about electronics, and I probably, especially if it's radio tube electronics, likely to get the right answer for that. Well, everybody has a little domain where they really know it's a hobby thing or whatever, and they just keep up on it.
But when you have to explain, what is the prize like? There are so many questions. I was trying to explain to my students that it's like a meteor comes and lands in your front yard, and if you're really lucky, you aren't standing under it at the time. We had no idea that you could go to a website. We'd just been on a three-week trip. We'd just gotten home. Jan was at our office 20 miles away getting email, and I hung up on the caller the first time around because I thought it was a Guatemalan phone scam that was popular at the time, and they wouldn't say anything, gobble, gobble, gobble. And then they called back, and they asked for Dr. Hall, and I thought, well, that's a step upward. And so by then, the TV, which had been left on overnight, was giving the streaming video. But we've gotten all kinds of responses like, how about that Pulitzer Peace Prize? Well, no, not quite. Or, is the Nobel Prize good to eat? That was one, the next door neighbor's second grader. So there's a lot of misapprehension and misinformation, and you kind of hope the responsibilities will go away after the first year, and new people will go out and give the talks and make the site visits and ask for the autographs and the responsibilities that go with. But we're also in the elder age group that many people are beyond the age of travel. Other people would just like to sit home and say thanks a lot. But if you go out on the trail, a lot of responsibility and role modeling. Mm-hmm. You want to be the best person you can when you're in contact with students.
Lindy and John Hall visiting our studio earlier today at KUAF. Combined, they have 85 years of teaching experience, and he was awarded the 2005 Nobel Prize in Physics. They've created SciTech, an effort to foster interest in learning science and math among the country's school children. John Hall delivered the 2011 Robert D. Maurer Distinguished Lecture last night in Fayetteville. The annual lecture is sponsored by the Department of Physics in the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences and is named after alumnus Robert D. Maurer, co-inventor of the first telecommunications-grade optical fiber. Much more from the conversation with the Halls will be heard on Monday's edition of Ozarks at Large on KUAF. And the Nobel Prize serves as inspiration for today's question and a chance for you to win a couple of free tickets to see Maceo Parker when he performs at Walden Arts Center on Friday, April 8th at 8 p.m. Maceo Parker, one of the greatest saxophone players on the planet. He's played with James Brown, George Clinton, Bootsy Collins. He'll be performing live at Walden Arts Center Friday night, April 8th at 8 p.m. Two free tickets to someone who has the correct answer to today's question. All correct answers will go into, well, we still don't have anything to replace the wooden chicken it left with PJ when she retired from radio. We'll find something eventually, but all correct answers today will go into something, and we'll draw out one lucky winner who will receive two tickets to Maceo Parker at Walden Arts Center. Today's question revolves, as I mentioned, around the Nobel Prize. Two individuals have won a Nobel Prize in two different categories. Linus Pauling won the Nobel for Chemistry in 1954 and the Nobel Peace Prize in 1962. Who is the only other person to win a Nobel Prize in two different categories? Is it John F. Kennedy, Marie Curie, or Winston Churchill? Again, the only person besides Linus Pauling to win a Nobel Prize in two separate categories: John F. Kennedy, Marie Curie, Winston Churchill. If you think you know or just want to take a guess, 1-800-522-5823. That's 1-800-522-KUAF. Correct answers will be put in something. One person will be drawn out and will win two tickets to Maceo Parker Friday, April 8th at 8 p.m. at Walden Arts Center. We'll announce the answer after Garrison Keillor and the Writer's Almanac. Good luck. And the answer to today's question, who is the only person besides Linus Pauling to win Nobel Prizes in two separate categories? Marie Curie. She won the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1903 and for Chemistry in 1911. And congratulations to yesterday's winner, a question about leprechauns. That went to Rebecca Libby of Fort Smith. Rebecca, thanks for playing. We'll have another question on Monday. Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from the University of Arkansas Fort Smith's 30th season of entertainment, concluding this spring with the UAFS Drama, Chorale, Symphonic Band, and Jazz Band, with performances in March and April. More information about each show and online tickets at uafortsmith.edu. Ozarks at Large is also supported by Malco Theaters, offering birthday parties, special events, and group rates for individuals and businesses. More information available on the web at malco.com. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Waldron, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 26 years. You can listen online at KUAF.com. You can also listen to all of our stations, KUAF 2 and KUAF 3, for free online at KUAF.com as well. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. Thanks so much for listening. Ithi Agnihotri-Madolker will host Sunday Ozarks at Large Sunday morning. I'm back next Monday at noon.